Welcome to Triple Take, the podcast where we talk about how books, albums, and films shape us. I'm Carla Jean Whitley.
I'm John Hammondry.
And I'm Matt Scalise.
And today we're going to talk about our favorite Christmas stuff. This time of year, we tend to turn to Christmas music, Christmas films, etc.
I've been listening to it since the day after Halloween, so I'm like as bad as it gets when it comes to Christmas.
You turned on Magic 96?
Like, it's like Disney and Christmas, and like that, those are my sappy, saccharine things that keep me centered in the cynical world of journalism.
I had a long stretch of my life where I refused to listen to Christmas music. I didn't like it, and I was tired of it. And I've come back around. Mm-hmm. I think it's that thing of getting into your like later 20s, early 30s, and the nostalgia kicked in fully for me. So, but it's not really nostalgia because I never really liked it. So it's just that I just now like Christmas stuff. Yeah.
We'll talk about that here in a minute. But I actually have disliked the holiday itself ever since I've worked in journalism. I blame a lot of that on my experience at a certain small town newspaper. But Christmas music, man, I get real cynical about it. But the stuff that I love, I love. So let's get started.
So let's talk about Christmas music. What's your favorite Christmas album?
Man, okay, so this is a really, really tough question. I've narrowed it down to three, and I'm just going to talk more about whichever one gets y'all talking more. I'm real cynical about this, like I said, but I am absolutely head over heels for Alabama's Christmas album. Oh, yes. And Amy Grant, she's done several, but the first one. And then Red Mountain Church, which is based here in Birmingham, has an absolutely drop-dead gorgeous album of Christmas hymns.
Well, it wouldn't be a Christmas special if we didn't have a Christmas special guest. And oh, look, it's my wife, Robin Hammondry.
I thought it was to be Santa Claus.
Because Robin's favorite album is, Christmas album is also Alabama.
My mom loves this album, and I have such great memories. And y'all, I grew up in Michigan, and this is Christmas to me. This album.
It makes me cry. And how do you feel about This Will Hear the Christmas Bear?
Oh, it's just funny. It's such
a
goofy song.
I love it so much. So my college roommate says that song is the number one best thing about not being my roommate anymore. I love it dearly, and I'm sure she likes some Christmas albums that I think are stupid.
And both of those albums, the Amy Grant one and the Alabama one, have Tender Tennessee Christmas on it, and that's one of like the best Christmas songs.
Even though we live in Alabama.
So I don't want to be that guy who takes it all down. Because I'm sure, given time, I would appreciate them. But I grew up having those albums on repeat for about 2 months out of the year in my parents' car. And I think that's part of my, like, what sort of, I think I burned out on it. And I think that I sort of didn't really come to like Christmas music just because I was limited probably in my selection. But
do you want to take a sad selfie to experience, document this moment?
Yeah, I ruined the moment because we had a special guest show up. It was like when David Bowie came in to Bing Crosby's Christmas special.
Which is
it was
like
so
one
nice.
Of my favorite Christmas songs.
It's way up there for me. But yeah, I think what's weird is the sort of Christmas music a lot of people think about associating with their childhood. For some reason, it doesn't work for me. And what ended up making me like Christmas was when I started hearing Christmas songs that were done in a very un-Christmassy way all of a sudden. And almost like I liked that it sort of stuck out and didn't have the sort of same feeling to it. I liked when I heard some Christmas music that jumped out, and one of them that I know kind of I've enjoyed since I first encountered it is the Paul McCartney and Wings Christmas song, that Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. It's just so weird and synthesizer heavy. It does not sound like a Christmas song at all, and I kind of like it for that. My album that I picked for this is the Jackson 5 Christmas album, which again it just sounds like a Jackson 5 album.
They've got some of the best renditions of those songs.
They're great, but I think it's R&B music, and you could listen to it 365 days a year. It really is not, it doesn't sound like Christmas music to me.
Before we get to mine, I want to jump in and ask our resident Beatles fangirl which Christmas song she likes more, Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time or Happy Christmas, War is Over, John Lennon and Yoko Ono's Christmas song.
Do you see the aghast face that I still am sporting since Matt identified that as a good song?
Yeah. I think a lot of people not liking it is why I like it. It's very hipster of me.
It's kind of funny because it's like John writes this like really like sort of hippie deep.
Oh, it's not. It's not song. A Christmas song at all.
And then like, I love it. And then Paul's just like, well, screw you. I'm just gonna write this like happy Christmas song. That's, I don't think that was like
John Lennon wrote the most depressing Christmas song of all time.
But I think, and this is what might differentiate me from y'all's album choices, I think like really great Christmas songs, the ones that stick with you, have to have a little bit of like melancholy wistfulness to them. Like I'll Be Home for Christmas, Blue Christmas.
You like the Joni Mitchell song? I mean, like those are like cutting down like, trees.
There's
don't you?
Like because Christmas is always like wonderful, but it's like there's always that.
No, it is.
There's like that slight bittersweetness.
Absolutely, it is. There is an inherent sort of sadness for a lot of people, especially as we get older, to the holiday. I think I probably just avoid that stuff. I think there's a lot of great sad Christmas songs. A lot of great songwriting.
It's not even necessarily like sad. It's just like it's like the people are happy, but it feels like there's something slightly weird there.
I think that one of the things that I have appreciated about Christmas, and I know I will appreciate especially this year, is that you do get to be happy. And that doesn't mean that you're happy overall about life, about what's going on. But there's some sort of celebration every year. You know, there are lights up and you can celebrate that. And I think you don't really value that unless you know what sadness is, unless there's a little bit of sadness there.
I'll Be Home for Christmas is basically exactly that
sentiment.
I mean, it's like everything is bad, but we can have a good day today.
And then even I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. I mean, it's like just like the ones I used to know. It's like they're trying to get back to like their Christmas memories.
Right.
Christmas is always, you know, strongest in the memory. My favorite Christmas album, which will tee us up to talk about Christmas movies as well, is the Vince Guaraldi Trio's Charlie Brown Christmas album.
Great choice,
because it's just
John.
So jazzy. Like, I listened to it in June.
Yes.
You know, it's just like sometimes you're just sitting at your desk and you're just like, yeah, I need just like that hi-hat drum.
It's so great.
John, tell them what you do with Alex every year.
Okay, he told me this earlier this week. Like, I told you, like,
I love it.
A nerd and I'm sappy and I'm terrible. And,
it's part of what we appreciate about
I don't know how this started. Like, it was in college, and I realized that my friend Alex Blaxbart and I, which I guess I'm outing him to all his high-powered lawyer friends, we were both, like, the biggest Christmas fans that we knew. And so we just did this challenge where, starting November 1st, we would text different Christmas lyrics for a different song every day through Christmas Day. And so I had to learn some, like, really weird Christmas songs. In order to like keep them fresh, like there's like, you know, there are songs about Christmas cats, and like there's like,
you know, did and you like have the Christmas donkey song.
Yes, Dominic the donkey.
Yeah,
jankety jank, eeyaw eeyaw. And so now we've got into a routine where like the days after Christmas you do the nightmare. I mean, the days after Halloween you do the Nightmare Before Christmas songs, and then you work your way all the way up through. So, like, on election, or the day after election day, we did some really sad Christmas songs about, like, how the world was changing. And, you know, it's our weird, quirky Christmas tradition. But, that said, let's dive into Christmas movies. Okay, so your movie and book are the same. Well, then, what are they?
How the Grinch Stole.
Okay,
I guessed it.
That is not where I was guessing.
Yeah.
Because mine are almost the same.
Well, and, so maybe this is a weird selection because, but then actually, no, it's probably perfect. So I just got through talking about my cynicism toward Christmas, which started in adulthood. Obviously, I've loved The Grinch since I was a child because I have since. And as a child, I don't remember being particularly cynical about Christmas. I actually held on to the belief in Santa Claus probably well past the age that I should have let go of it. And I had a Rudolph sighting one time, so that was part of it too. But the Grinch is a sort of cynical tale, but then it ends with such happiness and joy. And I think that for me, that embodies what we were talking about with that sort of wistful, nostalgic feeling that comes with the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, it addresses head on in a special that's 50 years old now, like this ongoing tragedy of like the commercialism of mm-hmm. Christmas versus the true meaning of Christmas. And you know, it's something's comforting about the fact that people have always been wrestling with that, and yet people still love Christmas.
Well, and the thing that I've realized in recent years is I get real cynical about the commercialization aspects. I get real angry at the stuff in the stores. I never get tired of seeing Christmas lights or wreaths, and I saw them both for the first time this season, this week. We're recording the week of the election in early November. And Christmas lights, man, every time. And you know what? There's no selling in that. And I think that's part of why they just brighten me.
I actually think the movie is a little bit better than the book.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly it's because of the song.
Yes.
Which
it
might be one of my favorite Christmas songs, to go back a category. It's just so strange and funny. And
I think that's fair.
Well, it's a great little cartoon moment.
I mean, it's right. The narration is wonderful, too.
yeah.
Not terrible.
No, but
I was being grinchy there.
It's right. No, it's
it's
so
Boris Karloff, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's just such a distinct, weird little thing that has carried. Like, I think as a lot of the stuff that we grew up with and the cartoons we used to watch mm-hmm. when we were kids and the Looney Tunes, like, my kids don't know what any of that stuff is, mm-hmm. but they still, a couple of things have carried through, and they tend to be seasonal. Like, the mm-hmm. Grinch is one of them. The Charlie Brown Christmas is one of them too. Mm-hmm. So those have like survived through, and I think it's because of their attachment to Christmas probably.
Yeah, it's an event, like you watch it every year.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to throw out this quick question. Is there a difference between movies that are Christmas movies and movies that are set at Christmas?
Yes, there is, because there's a very good reason why we're not going to talk about Die Hard today.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about Die Hard today? Well, what about Love,
John,
actually?
John just ripped up his notepad and threw it away. No, I mean, I think that there are movies that have are set at Christmas, and there might be some vague mm-hmm. attachment to it. Like, I would say that Home Alone is very, very much still a Christmas movie, even though it's obviously...
It's a caper.
It's a silly action comedy, but there is the overall sentiment of the movie is it's basically John Hughes' Christmas movie. I mean, you know, it has this theme of families getting together, and that's what you actually want to mm-hmm. have around you on Christmas, but I think there's this discussion that you're talking about, it does come up a whole lot. And but I mean, I think there's a few movies that are also not family friendly movies that are still mm-hmm. Christmas movies. And I would put A Christmas Story up there in that category. I think that's a movie that people certainly show their kids and take their kids to see. But I don't really think that movie's for kids. I don't think a kid could really appreciate that movie because it's such a sort of, you know, it's all about nostalgia and how warped and strange everything actually becomes in your mind over time. How sort of surreal your childhood seems to you after you are looking back at it mm-hmm. as an adult. And it's, you know, there is some cynical stuff in that movie too, but I think it's also, you know, kind of about how weird and scary your childhood can seem sometimes. And, mm-hmm. and in that way, I think in that contrast is why things like Christmas are so great when you're a kid, because it's sort mm-hmm. of like unbelievably mm-hmm. positive in this
right.
otherwise like very confusing life that you have as a kid.
So what are y'all's favorite movies?
That's probably mine, honestly.
Yeah.
I would put A Christmas Story up there. It is really, really funny, but has a lot to say, I think, about Christmas and the role that it plays as we get older, and the way that, like, you can remember every mm-hmm. Christmas from your childhood.
Yeah.
That's, I couldn't tell you I remember every 4th of July from my childhood, but I definitely remember every single Christmas in some way. I remember some visual from it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough question because, like, one of my favorite movies, period, is It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm.
But I don't really think it's a Christmas movie.
Like, yeah.
Because the majority of the movie doesn't take place at Christmas.
Right.
I mean, you've got, it's like kind of a story about a man realizing his, you know, value to his friends and family, and that sort of a Christmassy feeling.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of that Christmas Carol vibe to it.
And right. There's snow.
And it's dark and nostalgic.
Yeah. And it's a great movie, but my favorite Christmas movie, the one I have to watch every single year, is The Muppet Christmas Carol, because I freaking love Muppets.
It's great.
They're awesome. And it's also the best version of A Christmas Carol. Like, there are a lot of Christmas Carol movies, but this one nails the book. And part of it is because they have Gonzo playing Charles Dickens, so they're actually able to work in a lot of the original Dickens language,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, some of, like, I love the Mickey Mouse version, but it's about 30 minutes long, and they, you know, they distill the story down to its,
just its,
you know,
barest essence.
Bare bones. Whereas the Muppet version, I mean, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, when you're a kid, that ghost is scary.
Really?
And
yeah. And the whole scene, the whole sequence of him looking at his past is honestly probably the most heartbreaking, sincere thing that Jim Henson ever had anything to do with. And I mean, that shows you to me that what an incredible filmmaking team the Muppets folks were. Like, they definitely made a lot of silly fun stuff,
mm-hmm.
but there is a heart to what they were doing. And all of the Muppet movies have moments in them that actually make me tear up a little bit. But this one is the most sincere, I see.
Yeah, when Michael Caine, who is like the definitive Scrooge, by the way, you know, and he goes back into the past and he sees his young self and his fiance parting, and the fiance is singing this, you know, breakup song to him, and he starts crying and singing along with it. It's just like such an emotional moment. It is weird that, like, Michael Caine has this sort of Yorkshire accent and young Scrooge doesn't. I don't know what happened to his voice as he got older, something about being bitter. But then also Kermit the Frog as Bob Cratchit, and Statler and Waldorf, the old man Muppet, says Jacob and Robert Marley.
Oh, that's great.
You know, they really Fozzie Bear as Fezziwig, but they call him Fozziwig. They really nail the embodying the Muppet characters as well.
Well,
it's terrific.
You guys have left me with something to watch this season because I haven't seen either of them.
Really?
You've
never seen A Christmas Story or a Muppet Christmas Carol? Wow.
So, goals. So the books.
Yeah. So obviously one of my favorite Christmas stories and Christmas books is A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
But since I basically have already talked about that, my other favorite Christmas story, and I think one that, you know, really gets at what Christmas is all about, is The Gift of the Magi,
mm-hmm.
Where you have this, you know, hard on their luck couple. All they have is... he has a gold watch and she has like her long luxurious golden hair, and they both want to get each other a present, but times are tough, and so she sells her hair to a local salon and gets $20 for it and buys him a watch chain, and he sells his watch to buy her a ribbon for her hair. And, you know, it's just like, I think that what I love about Christmas and why I look forward to it every year is that even when things are terrible, you see the best in people, and that spirit of, even if you have nothing, trying to give everything, I think is what makes Christmas really special. And so that's my favorite Christmas story. It's a great O. Henry short story, and he just really captures the spirit of Christmas very well.
I think for me, you know, The Grinch is my favorite. I think it's one, maybe the only Christmas book I own, maybe one of two or three. But the poem, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, still, you know, that's just a classic. It's kind of sets the tone. It draws my imagination into just the experience of what those evenings felt like as a child. And so it's always a welcome experience to revisit that.
So my pick for this is, over the years, as I have brought this up to other people and asked them about it, I've realized that I don't think it's very popular, and I don't know how my mom came across it, but she had this book when I was a kid, and she used to read it to us every year, and it's called Mr. Willoughby's Christmas Tree by Robert Barry. Is the and he didn't write a lot of books. He was like a sort of a weird German artist. But this is a children's book. It's very straightforward, and basically, like, the gist of it is that a big rich guy in a mansion buys a Christmas tree that's too big, and so they cut the top of it off, and basically, a series of woodland creatures continues to get this remnant of the tree, and they each, it's a little bit too big for where they live, so they all keep cutting the top of it off and passing it down. And, you know, it's just kind of a very straightforward, simple kind of kid's book. But the art, I have a copy of it still. It's out of print, but it's very beautiful book. And it's just, again, I haven't done a whole lot of like explication to figure out what the book is trying to say or you know why it means anything to me, other than the fact that my mom liked it and used to read it to me. But it's just sort of a book that has made its way through my family, and I know that there was at some point a TV short of it that ran on like NBC that had Robert Downey Jr. in it, but that's the only other thing I know about it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a sweet story because each person is just taking exactly what they need and then passing
right
on to the next person.
Yeah, definitely. It's and I think it's sort of a little bit about it's having a good Christmas for you is relative, and everybody just needs something in their that sort of helps it feel like a celebration. It doesn't have to be, yours doesn't have to be bigger than anybody else's. It can still be right for you and big enough for you, which definitely has come to mean more to me, I think, as I have my own kids and have a different job than my parents had and have to buy Christmas gifts for my kids every year. And maybe I don't buy them as many things as I got when I was a kid because, my life is different. That the first couple of Christmases, that probably bothered me a little bit, and now I've sort of gotten to where I'm okay with it, because you know what, my kids they love Christmas every year, and they don't seem to care what I get them or how much I get them. And I think most people get really caught up in whether their Christmas is going to be good enough that they're throwing for themselves or for the other people in their lives. And this is definitely, I think over the years, I've come to put less expectation on Christmas and just try to let it happen and just try to enjoy it and let it be what it is.
And then I think, I would be remiss as an editorial writer if I didn't mention, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
Mm.
Which is, it appeared in the New York Sun in 1897, responding to a little girl named Virginia who wrote to the newspaper to ask if there was a Santa Claus. And it has, some of the most moving language about belief and having joy in the world. I'll just read a quick part of it. Where they say, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to you and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would the world be if there were no Santa Claus? It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight, the eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus, you might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus, but even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is not a sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not, but that's no proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world where not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else real and abiding. I just think that's a really nice message for Christmas.
Thank you for reading that.
I'm Matt Scalise. You can find me on social media at Matt Scalise.
I'm Carla Jean Whitley, and you can find me all over social stuff at Inkstained Life.
And I'm John Hammontree. You can find me on Twitter at John Hammontree. And y'all be sure to download us on iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks.
We'll talk to you next week.